Nathan Fraser Show, episode number 109, Marketing, Meme Magic, and Mainstream Media. All right, here we go.
Mixing business with politics. This is the Nathan Fraser Show.
What is up, free market squad, and the place to be? It's your boy Nathan Fraser, the high priest of propaganda, the Sultan of Sales Copy, your host with Hero Complex. My name is Nathan Fraser. More importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. And first of all, thank you for joining me. Today, we're going to be talking about marketing, meme magic, and mainstream media. Not in that particular order, though. I'm going to mix it up a little bit, but we've got a wild rabbit trail to go down today. So let's go ahead and just start. And you know what? We're going to start off with a meme that's been very popular lately, and that is the NPC meme, the non-player character meme. And unless you're a total normie, you've probably already seen it. It's the meme that's all about the gray, emotionless face. Looks like a guy that was probably drawn on like Windows Paint from 2003. He's made up of he's like a gray, emotionless guy with a straight line for a mouth, a sideways check mark for his nose, and two dots for eyes. You probably know what I'm talking about. And people are using it to imply that liberals are NPCs, non-player characters, because of their canned responses and their unthinking belief systems. Today, we're going to jump into, at the beginning of the show at least, we're going to jump into where this meme, where this idea comes from, that liberals are NPCs. And then we're going to go a little bit deeper than most people are going with this meme. And then we're going to turn it in. We're going to tie it into mainstream media, why mainstream media is so outraged about this meme in particular, but memes in general, and how you can use this knowledge to improve your own marketing. So let's go ahead and just jump into it. Where does this idea of the non-player character meme come from? Where does this idea of the non-player character being applied to liberals come from? So first of all, it goes back further than just this meme. There's this idea of the philosophical zombie, the person who's not really a person, the person without a soul. This is an older idea. Recently, there was actually a study that came out and said that a lot of people actually lack an inner monologue, which means people have self-reported that they don't talk to themselves. They don't hear an inner voice. They don't think out loud to themselves, which I guess really isn't thinking out loud, but a lot of us have these inner monologues where we reason things out to ourselves, where we think about things and we hear this voice in our head that is us. We hear ourselves talking to ourselves. It's a deep philosophical question. And this idea is, it's an old idea. I'm sure anybody who's a self-inspecting, somebody who examines themselves, not like that, you pervert. Anybody who is very introspective has probably already pondered the idea that maybe they're alone in the world. Maybe they're the only person in the world. Maybe the world itself is just an illusion, just a dream, and they're the only ones that are real, and everybody else is part of the illusion. This is something that most of the greatest thinkers throughout time have at least pondered upon. And when you take that idea and then when you mix in technology and where technology is at and where technology is very likely to go in the very near future, you come up with this idea of, which is actually gaining a lot of traction right now, the simulated reality theory, or the simulation reality theory. And basically the basis behind this is graphics keep getting better and better. If you look at video games like Super Mario or even Atari, the old Atari classic games, and then you look at video games today, it's amazing the amount of difference in realism that graphics are able to accomplish today. I mean, nowadays they have video games where it's no longer just eight levels or eight worlds with four levels each. There's entire worlds, entire planets, entire galaxies to explore. So and the graphics are getting to the point where it's hard to distinguish TV from a video game. And they're saying that in the very near future, within the next 10 to 15 years, maybe 50 years, graphics are going to be so immersive, so detailed that they'll be almost indistinguishable from reality. And if you look at movies like Ready Player One, or if you look at movies like The Matrix, where they hook the computer right up to your actual brain, and there are talks that Sony and Microsoft are actually exploring this idea. It's very possible that whether it be through goggles that you put on and they laser print the graphics onto your eyeballs, or you actually jack something into your brain, there's talk that within a few decades, they'll be able to create simulated realities so realistic that the average person won't be able to tell the difference. That once you're jacked into it or once you're plugged into it, you won't be able to tell the difference between it and the real world. And with that being a very real possibility, maybe only 10, 15 years away, then people have started to wonder, are we already in something like that? And when you start running the statistical probabilities of is this reality real or is this reality a simulated reality? Have we already reached the point where we're able to duplicate and simulate reality? And have we already plugged ourselves into it? Whether it's a situation like The Matrix, or maybe it's a situation like we're on a subspace travel, we're going from planet to planet and we're frozen in cryogenics to help us make the trip from one star system to another. And in that time, in order to avoid going crazy, we jack ourselves into a simulated reality. If we know that it's absolutely going to be a possibility in the next 10 to 15 years, how do we know that it already isn't a possibility and what we're experiencing now is the simulated reality? Now, I'm not going to weigh in yet on whether I believe that to be true or not, but that's kind of where the simulated reality theory comes from. And a lot of the greatest thinkers are giving it more and more weight nowadays. Now, when it comes to video games, which is where the NPC meme actually comes from, I just wanted to give a little bit of background on how deep this meme actually goes if you dig into it. But the meme really comes from massive multiplayer online games. Games like World of Warcraft, games like Fortnite, games like Battlefield, games where a bunch of people get together and they play against each other. And there's two different types of characters in those games. There's characters where there's actually somebody playing as the other character, and then there's characters where the computer is playing the character. They're artificial intelligence, but they're not really artificial intelligence because they have a pre-canned set of reactions. So when you go up and you interact with them, they'll say the same things over and over again, and it's really easy to realize that this isn't a real character. They've got certain things that they can and can't do, and they've been pre-programmed, and they can't actually evolve in their thinking. They just repeat the same lines. They repeat the same scripts. And a lot of people have said, well, that's kind of how liberals are. That's kind of how liberals interact. They say Trump is bad. Trump is evil. Trump is Hitler. Punch a Nazi. And so people have started comparing liberals to NPCs. They've started comparing liberals to non-player characters, and they've started making a ton of different memes based off of this NPC meme and comparing them to liberals. And it took off. It took the internet by storm over the last week, and it's pissing off a lot of people. A lot of leftists are getting pissed. Twitter banned like 1,500 accounts for taking advantage of the meme. Facebook is talking about banning the meme. Mainstream media is talking about how dehumanizing the meme is. And it's taken the internet by storm, and it's pissing off all the right people. So now, about the whole simulation theory, about whether or not liberals are actually NPCs, I don't actually buy into that theory. Maybe simulated reality, maybe I buy into that. It's a possibility. I'm not willing to completely discredit it. But as far as liberals being NPCs, I don't really buy into that. Here's the thing. Most people that are spreading the NPC meme, I don't think that they're spreading it because they actually believe liberals are non-player characters. I think they're just spreading it because it's funny and because it's effective. The real reason people seem to act like non-player characters, the real reason liberals tend to act like non-player characters is because of the fact that most of us live in echo chambers, especially liberals. Most of us live in worlds where our ideas aren't challenged very often. We don't like to have our ideals challenged. And the snowflake generation, the generation of people that are given participation trophies and never challenged on their beliefs and never told that they were wrong, they especially like the comfort of echo chambers. And they repeat whatever their TV tells them, whatever their television tells them, whatever their favorite celebrity tells them, whatever their favorite late night host tells them. And they don't watch anything that doesn't conform to what they already believe. Now, this is most of us. Most of us live our lives that way. But liberals tend to be more extreme with it. And that's just because of the way that their mindset is, because of the values that liberals tend to hold. It's more comfortable to them to live in an echo chamber than it is for people who are outside of the liberal left-right paradigm. Now, like I said, I feel like all of us fall victim to this, and mainstream media knows this. Mainstream media knows that people want to be told that they're right. People want to be told that anyone who disagrees with them are idiots, and they know that people will stop watching if their ideals are challenged. So mainstream media provides an echo chamber. Facebook, through the algorithm, provides an echo chamber. YouTube, through their algorithms, provide an echo chamber. Twitter, through its algorithm, provides an echo chamber, because they know that to keep you tuning in, to sell you to their advertisers, they need to keep you in an environment that doesn't challenge the way that you think, because people will leave an environment that challenges them and they'll stick around for an echo chamber. So mainstream media provides an echo chamber, just like Facebook does, just like YouTube does, just like Twitter does. And the other thing about it is, too, the more myopic your worldview is, the easier you are to sell to advertisers, because advertisers, us marketers, when we're going to start advertising, we want to know, well, what's their worldview? What are their values? Who are their villains? Who do they blame for everything wrong in the world? Who do they think is going to save the world? We want to know these things. And so the more myopic your worldview is, the easier it is to box you in to those particular categories, the easier it is for us to write advertisements for you. So if you're a platform that sells your users to advertisers, it makes sense to keep your users living in a myopic echo chamber. It makes sense to do everything you can to keep everything that your users or your viewers see within a very strictly defined set of worldviews, so that you're easier to sell to people like me, because people like me take advantage of unthinking idiots out there. And I hate to say it that way, but that, you know, it is what it is. And I'm just being honest with you. So speaking of being honest, if we're being honest, the NPC meme applies to most people, not just the left-wing people. Right-wing people parrot their talking heads just as much as anybody else does. I get into discussions with Fox News watchers, and I hear them saying the exact same things that I heard Tucker Carlson saying last night, or Sean Hannity saying last night. I get into discussions with libertarians, and you hear the same NPC input-output pre-written scripts: taxation is theft, voting is violence. You hear the exact same things. One time, me and one of my buddies, Drew Sample, we were at a Milo event, and we were sitting out, and this was years past our own red pilling moments. Red pill is another NPC term that the woke people on the right tend to parrot and repeat as well. We were sitting there and we were listening to all of these kids talk and discuss, and they were just saying the same talking points that we were mindlessly repeating years beforehand. And so it was kind of weird to see all these kids who think that they're awake and watch them parroting ideas that we knew that they didn't come up with. They were just repeating. So even the people that think that they're awake are really just repeating scripts that they heard from people that are better at encompassing or encapsulating their worldview. So all of us fall victim to it. It's not just the people on the left that can be guilty of parroting things and having pre-scripted arguing points and be guilty of acting like non-player characters. Now, here's where this comes from. The reason why we tend to fall back on talking points, the reason why we tend to fall back on sound clips, the reason why we tend to fall back on scripted thinking is because there's two different types of thinking. There's two different ways that the brain works. There's scripted thinking, and then there's exploratory thinking, and we need both of them. In order to survive, we have to have both levels of thinking. Scripted thinking is like the base level responses for things. Apples are safe to eat. Fire is hot. Don't touch things that are red hot fiery. These are the things that we don't want to waste our caloric energy on. We don't want to waste thinking. Thinking requires a bunch of calories being burnt. And the things that we can subvert over to the base level, scripted level thinking, the more stuff that we can allow that part of our brain to rationalize and take over, the less calories we burn, the less exhaustive we become overthinking. So the more that we can hand off to that part of our brain, the more that we can use those calories for other more important activities. And I call this, and a lot of other people in the marketing industry call this click whir responses. We hear the click, we do the whir. We have the input and we create the output. And marketers, compliance professionals, politicians, they all love this kind of thinking because it makes you easy to manipulate. It makes you predictable. They know if we hit them with this input, we're going to get this type of response from them. A great book on this, if you really want to understand this, I can't go deep into it in this podcast episode, but a great book about this whole thing is a book called Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. If you really want to get into the difference of scripted thinking versus exploratory thinking, and you want to really understand how scripted thinking works, how click-whir thinking works, this book is a must read. But that's basically what it is. Our brain says, hey, there's certain things that we don't need to expend a bunch of calories on. We're gonna delegate those things over to the click whir, to the scripted thinking part of our brain so that we can use those calories for more important things that we have to explore. Now, exploratory thinking is where discovery, where advancement comes from. This is where we travel into worlds unknown. We travel into ideas unknown. And this is part of the brain that most people don't ever actually use past like high school or college. Most people turn this part of their brain off past that part of their life. And when typically if we ever have to turn this part of our brain back on to learn something new, to make a discovery, to expand upon something that we already know, or to venture out into something that we don't know yet, as soon as we figure that we've got it and we've figured out everything there is to know or enough about the subject to where we'll be able to handle ourselves in the future with it, then we immediately take that and we move it out of exploratory thinking into the realm of scripted thinking. So all of us do this. All of us are guilty of saying, of handing off most of our thinking to the scripted thinking. It's just a survival mechanism. It's just something that we do in order to preserve calories, to preserve energy, to preserve our thinking capabilities for more important things. Now, most of us rarely keep anything in the subject or in the realm of exploratory thinking for very long. Most of us rarely keep anything in that realm to where we can go and re-examine it. Most of us, as soon as we think we've got it figured out, for the most part, we move it over to our scripted thinking part of our brain. Very few of us actually keep it in the exploratory and poke around and prod and challenge it and try and see it from other points of view, try and be empathetic to what other people might think, because it's uncomfortable. It's very uncomfortable for us to admit to ourselves that maybe we don't know everything there is to know about a specific thing. Maybe we don't completely understand it. Maybe we might be wrong about something. We don't want to face that in ourselves. It's not very comfortable. And there's more important things to do with our life than and pick the nitty-gritty details about things. So we usually say, well, I understand it enough. I figured it out. I'm going to go ahead and move it over to my scripted part of my brain. And whenever it comes up, we fall back on the scripted. We don't bring it back into the exploratory and actually challenge it. We just say, nope, I already figured out what I think about this. I already understand this. This is what I think about it. So when we get into these arguments with people, we resort to the pre-scripted talking points that won us over. And we just have arguments where it's talking point versus talking point, and both people are in the scripted part of their brain, and they're just having one set of scripts run against another set of scripts, and it just ends up devolving into who's going to be the first one to compare the other person to Hitler. And that's pretty much how most political arguments go. That's pretty much how most arguments in general go, is because when people argue, what they tend to do is they just resort to their preconceived notions, the scripts that they already have, the scripted part of their thinking, and they're just running their script against somebody else's script. And neither one of them are willing to step into the realm of exploratory thinking to say, well, I'm going to actually listen to what this other person says. I'm going to actually make myself vulnerable to their ideas to see if maybe I might be wrong about something. So it's just the way that our brains work. It's how evolution programmed us. And it's not just the leftists that fall victim to this. All of us fall victim to this. I know how it works. I actively exploit this fact for my clients. I actively exploit this fact to make a lot of money for myself and for the people that I work for. And I still fall victim to this. So it doesn't matter how well you understand it. It's just part of evolution. It's just part of how our brains are programmed. We all fall victim to it. It's not just the left. Now, the left tends to fall victim to it more often than anybody else. And so that's why they've kind of, the NPC, non-player character meme is most applicable to them, because they tend to fall back on the Trump orange man bad thinking a lot easier than most other people do. Now, we're going to talk about meme magic for a moment. Why are memes so powerful? Because you could argue that memes won the election for Trump in 2016, and the meme war continues to wage on, and it seems like the left just can't keep up. They're losing the meme war over and over and over again. And whether it's the Nike memes from Colin Kaepernick, whether it's the Trump memes, whether it's Keck memes, whether it's NPC memes, the left just over and over and over again prove that they can't meme. And I don't really think that it's the left can't meme. I actually think it's that meme culture is just not attractive to people that are attracted to leftist ideals. Memes are for people who are creative. Memes are for people who like to produce. And people who are attracted to leftist ideals don't like to produce. They like to consume. They like to let other people produce so that they can live on welfare, so that they can live comfortably and have their post-scarcity utopia. Memes survive in the open marketplace of ideas. Memes can't be forced on you. You're not forced to consume memes. Memes survive on merit. Memes survive on demand. Does the marketplace say that this is a good meme? Does the marketplace say that this is a meme worth sharing? Leftists don't typically do very well in the open marketplace, especially the open marketplace of ideals. Leftists tend to be attracted to academia. Leftists tend to be attracted to mainstream media because they can force their ideas on you. They can force you to consume their ideas, especially in college. Memes, you can't force people to share a meme. You can't force people to pay attention to your meme. Yeah, it's all merit-based. It has to be a good meme, otherwise it dies. And that's not the case in what leftist people are attracted to. Leftist people are attracted to forcing their ideas on people. Memes work better in the open marketplace. And open marketplaces tend to be more attractive to people on the right end of the political spectrum than they are to people on the left end of the political spectrum. The other thing is, memes push the limit of humor. Memes very often walk the line between offensive and humorous. And the left is offended by everything nowadays. The left just doesn't like humor. And so it makes sense why most people on the left can't meme, because memes require an amount of humor. They have to be humorous, and the left finds everything that's humorous to be offensive nowadays. And so, of course, the left can't meme because of that. And then the last thing is, people who are good at memes tend to be attracted to less authoritarian and more free market mindsets. The people that like memes, the people that share memes, the people that create memes tend to be less authoritarian. They don't want to force their ideas on you. They just want to present their ideas to you and let you make the decision on whether or not it's a good idea. And leftists don't really like letting you decide whether their ideas are good or not. They like to use the government to force their ideas on you. They like to use academia to force their ideas on you. They like to use mainstream media to force their ideas on you. So again, it's not that the left can't meme. It's that the culture of memeing is not attractive to people on the left. What it takes to be a good memer is not attractive to people that are attracted to the left. So, what makes memes so powerful? Now, the thing, what a meme is basically a meme is a big idea that's compressed down into a bite-sized chunk. It's something that can communicate you look at a meme and in like two sentences and an image, it conveys this big idea that can be a mind blower, be a huge aha moment for people that makes people say, wow, I've never even thought about it that way. But now just by looking at this one image, a still image with a couple of lines of text printed on top of it, I'm able to view something in a completely different way. Memes communicate big ideas in bite-sized chunks. And a good example of this is everything that I've said, everything that I spent the last half hour explaining about NPCs can be encapsulated in a single image of a emotionless gray Microsoft Paint drawing. So everything that we talked about from simulated reality theory to philosophical zombies to scripted thinking and unscripted thinking and exploratory thinking, all of that can be compressed into a single image and shared, and that entire idea can be compressed into a bite-sized chunk that can be shared across the internet. So our memes are great for that. Also, memes are versatile. Memes can be used over and over again to express a ton of different ideas or a ton of different variations on the original idea. So memes have a lot of replay value. Memes can be used over and over and over again, especially classic memes like the one simply can't do whatever meme from Lord of the Rings, or the meme with the guy and the two buttons and he's wiping his brow trying to figure out which button he should push, or the meme with the guy looking at one chick while his girlfriend's on the other side of him looking at him all pissed off. Why is he paying attention to this other chick? Those memes can be used over and over and over again to express tons of different ideas. And so they have a very long lifetime value. So they're very powerful in that way as well. And also, and this is probably the biggest thing about why memes are so powerful, is because they're easy to create and they're easy to spread. Somebody says, hey, I like this. I can use it to express five different variations of this idea. Let's go ahead and start a chat room let's start a thread on 4chan, or let's start a thread on Reddit, and let's come up with as many different variations of this idea off of this single image as we possibly can. And then let's head to Twitter and let's just start flooding Twitter with this meme. It gives the power to create and spread ideas to the little guy. All you need is access to a computer. You find an image that you like. You copy it into meme generator or meme flip or image flip or whatever meme generator software that you want to use, and anybody can create memes and anybody can spread them. It gives the power of media of taking ideas and spreading them out there to the world. It gives that power to you and me, and this is something that we've never had before: the ability to express ourselves and spread it out there to the masses in the way that memes give us that ability. That's a power that's been exclusive to the ruling elite. That's a power that's been exclusive to giant corporate media up until the last couple of years. And that's why mainstream media hates memes. That's why CNN, that's why MSNBC are constantly attacking meme culture, because the power that they've held for the last 50, 60 years, it's now in our hands. And it's basically the Gutenberg press given to us. And so, of course, they hate that. Now, what does this have to do with marketing? Here's the deal. I'm a marketer. I've said that a couple of times throughout this podcast episode. If you're new to the podcast, you might just be figuring this out about me. I'm a marketer. I love memes. I use memes in my marketing all the time, because memes give you the ability to do what I call Trojan horse marketing. And here's the deal. Smart marketers are starting to realize how powerful memes are, and they're trying to implement it into their marketing. Some of them are even doing it well. A lot of them do a really bad job of it. They don't understand what they see that memes get attention, but they don't understand how meme culture works. Now, here's why memes work so great for marketing. Here's why memes were able to win Donald Trump the election. Here's why memes are changing the world right now. The fact of the matter is, when people are on Twitter, when people are on Facebook, when people are on their social media, they stop and they read memes. They're scrolling. They see a meme, they stop and they read it. When they see your advertisement in their newsfeed, they scroll right past it. So an ad doesn't get the attention. A meme does get the attention. If your ad looks like a meme, it gets the attention. So if you can implement what works for memes into your advertising, it'll stop and get the attention. Also, like I said, marketing, good marketing needs to be able to explain a big idea in a brief message. And like I said, memes do this very well. So if you're trying to be an effective marketer, understanding how memes work can be great at improving your marketing. And as a copywriter, one of the things that we say about copy is your copy needs to be just long enough to convey the message and not a single word over that. And that's really what makes memes effective too. It's what makes one-liners effective. It's just long enough to convey the message and it doesn't go a single word over that. So understanding how memes work, implementing memes into your marketing, it can really help you get a lot more sales. It can win you the presidency of the United States, for God's sake. So understand memes. So if you can meme, work it into your marketing. If you can't meme, if you don't understand memes, start diving deep into meme culture. Start understanding memes. Start understanding what memes work or what makes memes work, because memes are power and memes aren't going anywhere. And they can be used to harness, or they can be harnessed to improve your sales. You can get more sales if you understand how memes work and you implement memes into your marketing. Here's the deal. Memes are already being used to sell ideas. Memes are being used to sway elections. Memes are being used to change the world. Why not use the same thing that can be used to sell ideas to also sell some of your product, to also sell some of your service? That's what I'm going to end the show on. Memes are powerful. People that understand how memes work have the ability to change the world. It's being proven over and over and over again. If you're a smart marketer, you need to be paying attention to what's going on in the memesphere. My name is Nathan Frazier. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Nathan Frazier Show. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whatever it is that I talked about today. Leave it in the comments section down below. If you're not already subscribed, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. And check out the website, NathanFrazierShow.com. I'm out of here. Deuces.